This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
You're listening to the Oddball Aussie Podcast with me, your host, Oz Oddball. During this episode, you may hear things that challenge your own beliefs, but please have an open mind and enjoy. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Aussie Oddball. And if you have any stories you want to share, send them to theoddballaussie@hotmail.com. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Yes, welcome back to the Oddball Aussie Podcast. Tonight we're going to be talking about Faelor. So we're going to do an introduction to Faelor. Haven't really done much on Faelor. We've dipped our toes in it. It is one of my weaknesses, along with, you know, psychics and things like that. It's not something I've studied all that much. So it is something I really wanted to look into. Especially, I was talking to my daughter and she wants me to build her a fairy garden. Very popular amongst little girls. And yeah, I started thinking more and more, and I've been noticing a few more people around Twitter have been talking about Faelor a lot more recently. And with the change of seasons and things like that, I think it's got me thinking about these things as well. So definitely not something I'm a researcher of, but something I'm dipping my toes in, and I'm hoping I'll be sending out some invites to some people who really study this stuff hardcore, and hopefully getting one or two of them on the show for a bit of an interview and sort of explanation on some of this stuff from the mouth of someone who's an expert in it. So really looking forward to that. Got a few irons in the fire, and I'll be putting a few more out during the week. So if you're someone who listens to the show and you understand the Faelor really, really well, please let me know. Send me an email at theoddballaussie@hotmail.com, or you can send me a direct message on Twitter or tweet me, and I will definitely see your tweet or your emails. It's the two best ways to get in contact with me. So Faelor, very, very strange stuff, very interesting stuff. We automatically go to the mindset of the fairies in the garden type of thing. Straight away, it was not something that I was head over heels about, and then I started learning about its connection to a lot of folklore, and especially European folklore, which I have a real interest in, especially having Germanic family, Germanic bloodlines in my family. I do find it very interesting about the German folklore and stuff. So finding the interconnectivity within these stories, very interesting. I really do enjoy it. But tonight we're just going to do an introduction. So what the lore is, who the Fae folk are, a basic breakdown of the different of some different types of Fae, the different councils in the Fae. They've got councils in the belief system, and some of the origination and things like that. So it should be a pretty interesting show for people who are into that sort of Fae lore. If you're not interested in Fae, I can understand that. Certain people really don't like this type of thing. Certain people love this type of thing. But I recommend, even if you aren't someone who is head over heels with the idea of it, to have a listen, and make up your own mind, because it's the more I've dived into it, the more interesting it gets. All right, so let's start with who are the Fae folk? What are they? So the Fae folk, also known as the Fair folk or Good folk, are present in many areas. You probably picture things like toadstools and fairies and in the woods, but they can live anywhere. So a lot of people treat them like a spirit that lives in their home. Some people believe they're a blood and bones creature, and others believe they're an interdimensional. So they could be a bit of both, spiritual and blood and bones. Others believe they're just some sort of a god or some sort of a ghost. But yeah, there's a lot of different beliefs with them. But traditionally, the fae folk, also known as the good folk or fairies, or fairies spelled with F-A-E-R-I-S, so fairies maybe, come from the other world, a realm which pagans really believed in was a realm of magic. So they also have different factions, political parties. There's types of fairies. It's very very in-depth. You probably think of small angelic little beings with wings, the Tinkerbell type fairies, but really they're made up of a lot of different types of creatures. So let's start with the other world, where they come from. The other world is the realm of the deities and possibly also the dead. In Gaelic and Brittonic myth, it is usually a supernatural realm of everlasting youth, beauty, health, abundance, and joy. It is described either as a parallel world that exists alongside our own, or a heavenly land beyond the sea or under the earth. The other world is usually elusive, but various mythical heroes visit it either through chance or being invited by one of its residents. They often reach it by entering ancient burial mounds or caves. So we did a whole show on Stairways to Hell, and this sort of has that connection, or Stairways to Nothingness as well. A lot of people who follow fae lore will find what they call natural steps in the woods, and they'll say, yeah, that may be a link to a portal. So portals become a big thing in fae lore as well. We're not going to talk too much about portals in this or the structures, but there are some structures, and we'll talk about them shortly. But the other world is usually called Annwn in Welsh mythology and Avalon in Arthurian legend. In Irish mythology, is several names, including, I'm going to butcher this, the Tír na n-Óg, Mag Mel, and the Éamon Blach. In Irish myth, there is also the Teach Duin, where the souls of the dead gather. So we're thinking a lot of Irish, Scottish, Welsh areas of the world for the other world. But it is picked up in other cultures as well. Underworlds, heavens, that's the type of thing we're looking at. So it can vary from areas around Europe. But in saying that, the same ideas come up in Asian cultures, in belief systems, in native cultures around the world. And it's quite interesting. Even in Africa, there's beliefs that don't use the same terminology, but are referencing the same idea. The idea of a realm where these magical beings or godlike or demigod beings exist. So it is quite there is a definite parallel between cultures with that. And as I said before, there's a lot of connections with the interdimensional or different realms as well. You can tie this pretty well to Scandinavian folklore. You can tie this to the mythology of the Norse, so like Norwegian folklore, Germanic folklore, believing in the different rings and the different realms of existence. It's tied to a lot of different cultures, just pronounced in a different way, I guess. So there's a couple of other things. So before we're not going to get into so much of the realm stuff, but there are some things that mark some of these realms. So stone circles, structures like Stonehenge. You've got things like mushroom rings. So a ring of mushrooms that grows in forests. This can be, there's a natural reason behind this. Again, I haven't read up enough about that yet, but we will get into that probably the next time we talk about this. And a lot of people see these rings of mushrooms and they believe that it is some sort of a portal or a gateway to that realm. There's you know, all sorts of fairy rings. There's fairy mounds as well. And there's, as I said, the staircases to nowhere. So let's talk about, before we get into, so we now we know a basic idea of what the lore is. Very Arthurian in nature. Any of you who've played video games like I have, you know, your World of Warcraft, your Elder Scrolls, things like that. Anyone who loves Tolkien like I do, or loves any of the fantasy type books, will, a lot of things will come out of this and you'll go, that's from fantasy. Yeah. A lot of this stuff, the authors like Tolkien and people like that, drew from reality of ancient texts, of old textbooks and things like that, that talked about these things. Elves, fairies, they all appear in various different contexts. So it is, you will find a lot of stuff that sort of goes, oh, okay, this all comes from one sort of system. So there's six major courts of fairy, and they're sometimes used interchangeably. So you'll hear two main courts, called the Seelie Court and the Unseelie Court. So the Seelie Court it's associated with summer and spring, and the Unseelie Court is winter and autumn. But if I'm wrong on that, please correct me. But that's so far what I've been finding out. So the gist of it is that there was once a fairy king and a fairy queen. And all inhabitants lived in this city, the city of everlasting change. One could say they were originally Seelie Court. One day there was an uprising. Groups of fae no longer wanted to be part of the entirety of fairy. They wanted to hold a hierarchy of their own, thus branching off from the fairy. These fae were the beginning of the Unseelie Court. Think monarchs in that sort of sense, like different monarchies breaking off. And they could reign for 1,000 years. And this could be extended if the people of their court agreed to their reign. The Winter Court represents what people see as the malevolent side of the Fae. The Fae of this court frown upon humans. They're more inclined to talk about their cruelty. They're a little bit gruffer, a little bit rougher. Some of the words that sort of tied to them are dark, baleful, hatred. You know, there's some of that real dark animosity there. And when you think about that with actual winter for someone, when we go back to the ancient times when a lot of these stories were written, winter wasn't like what winter is for us now. Winter for us now is like, oh, it's a bit chilly. But for winter, for someone who lives in a hut, you lose family every winter. You know, people die in the winter, children and elderly especially die in the winter. So to tie this to an angry spirit, this could be a coping mechanism as well. And again, I'm looking at this from all angles. A lot of people see this as reality. The fae exist and it's real. Then a lot of people see it as cautionary tales. There's a lot of different opinions out there. So it could be cautionary tales. You could have, these could be also original encounters with cryptids or aliens. That's what some people think. They could be just fairy tales, explanations of existence, explanations of life and death. They could be a collective memory passed down in history. Some people believe at a time the Fae did actually exist alongside of us and people saw them. And due to whatever happened, maybe it was the evolution of man and the destruction that we started creating to the planet. A lot of people believe that this caused them to go back into their realm and not wanting anything to have anything to do with us, and leave sort of caretakers there with the seasons. So the Winter Court really is representative of our fears and our sorrows. So then we have the Spring Court. Now, we can see spring as being much calmer to, say, winter and summer. And the Fae of this court are generally polite, bright-eyed, and bushy-tailed. The Fae are apt to lure humans in with sweet dew. They also have blossoming curiosity. The spring court is strongest during the ends of winter and throughout the spring season. Despite the summer court having rained, these fae are peppy, quiet, seductive, emotional, and they're the type of fae that when you think about spring, you think, you know, birds, bees, you think about the flowers, you think about rejuvenation, life. And this is what we see out of those types of fae. The spring fae are also representative of, you know, tricksters, but like practical jokers. They're not really out there to try and genuinely hurt someone. They're just trying to muck around with someone. So they're the type of spirits that might move things around your house, not to harm you or to hurt you, but to get a giggle, to, you know, make you lose your keys, like little things like that. So you could even look at that as being some of similar to some of the yokai in Japanese mythology that are very trickster in nature. Then we have the summer court. Now, the summer court is much more well-mannered. They are still capable of cruelty, but they're much more hush-hush and subtle about it. You know, well-groomed, well-looked after. The summer court has a free reign over summer solstice and spring equinox months. They're the strongest during that time. The fae of the summer court are frivolous. They're hot-headed. They can have nothing but love, but also really fierce hatred. And when you think about the summer, very much like how summer treats the planet. Summers can be wonderful, full of joy and happiness, but summer, we well and truly know this in Australia, but summer can be cruel, harsh, can kill things, destroy things, but it can also be some of the happiest times of your life. And last but not least, we've got the autumn court. They're seen as equally malevolent to the winter, but much more middling. The fae of this court are generally the ones doing the dirty work and the trooping. However, these fae can have a much nicer side than the fae of than other fae. The autumn court is strongest during the ends of summer and throughout the autumn season. These fae are strong mystiques. They're very mysterious. They can be eerie. They can be devious. They're sort of cut from the same cloth as the winter. Fae of the different seasons can, yeah, they could be unseelie, they could be seelie. Generally speaking, summer and spring are more associated with seelie. There are more winter fae in the seelie court as well, though the winter and the autumn are more closely associated with the unseelie. More autumn is associated with the unseelie, but they are still separate courts, and a lot of people just clump them all together and only see seelie or unseelie. The seelie court is seen more beneficiary towards humans. Seelie means blessed or holy, and this comes from the German selig and Old English selig, the modern word silly, which can be understood as happy, harmless, or beneficial. In Irish, it is spelled S-E-L-E-I-G-H-E. The fae in this court are known to seek out humans to warn those who had accidentally offended them in one manner or another, and to return human kindness with favours of their own. Fae don't like to be in debt. Even so, a fairy belonging to this court will definitely avenge insults and are prone to much mischief. The most common time of day to see them is twilight and sometimes dawn. So they've got the unseelie court. Much more rebellious. They've got more evilly inclined fairies. If you cause offense to the seelie court, they'll come after you. The unseelie court doesn't need offense. They could come after you just to mess with you. They appear at night and assault travelers either physically, emotionally, and or mentally, especially spiritually ignorant folk. Like the fairies of the seelie court, neither of the fairies of the unseelie court always evil. However, when one of them is forced to choose, they will naturally prefer to harm than help. To summarize, the courts basically are the social structure of fae society. They have very strong political allegiances and they enforce their philosophy on existing members. They recruit for new members, they build armies, and they hold sway in seasonal power and blood and nobility in an odd communist society style, but with a monarchical rule. So very, very curious. There are, of course, those who swear no allegiance to any court. They are known as solitary fae. Nowadays, solitaries are seen as having neutral, balanced, or common ground between the courts, and they are also seen as some of the most dangerous. So they aren't controlled by a court. So they could go off and they could do amazing good for people. They could also do some terrible things. So that's pretty much how the courts work with the Fae. Again, not a scholar in this stuff. So if I am wrong, please correct me. But let's have a look at some of the types of fairies that belong. And again, all these fairies could belong in different courts as well. So these are some of the most common types. You've got the brownies. They're a household spirit. So think Dobby from J.K. Rowling, from Harry Potter. They're very much English and Germanic folklores. And the brownies were known as helpers for farmers. And they worked outdoor tasks, especially during the night, shoveling hay, feeding the sheep, things like that. So a helpful spirit, outdoor spirit. They're about 3 feet tall, have pointed ears, brownish complexions, and brown working clothes. So pretty much Dobby. They're super earthly. They don't have a family. They tend to live underground because they don't have wings. Though what's very different from the Harry Potter universe is in Faelor, they're not slaves. And they can leave family or property whenever they want. They tend to go to families who are most deserving. So people who work the hardest and they just need that extra bit of help. They could also be the people who leave out treats for them or thank you gifts. And they'll bring a household good luck if they're treated properly. So they're a bit of a magical magnet for luck. If there's a brownie living with you, you should keep your house nice and tidy. So they like to help with your chores, but they want the place kept clean. They're happy to help your crops grow better. They're happy for your animals to be looked after, and they want your house looked after, but they don't want to be cleaning up all your crap. Essentially, they don't want to be babysitting you, but they will bring you luck and they will bring happiness to your household, according to this. They also like gifts, or else they'll get angry. So they do love milk, cookies, or honey to be left out at night. They simply want to feel thought of. So I know a few people who believe strongly in the Faelor, and they will leave out a plate with a little bit of honey on it and a little bit of milk. Or they might leave a biscuit out. I know of some people who believe that leaving tobacco out as a gift, maybe a little bit of whiskey as a gift. So, I mean, me personally, I don't think I would be wanting to give away my whiskey like that. But I'm not a smoker, and smoking's too expensive. So maybe I might leave them some honey. I don't really partake in this type of stuff. I'm still learning about it. But there's a lot of people out there who do believe in this as a even as a spiritual thing. Even if it's not something they believe that there's a genuine thing living in their backyard, some people just like it as an anchor, a spiritual anchor. So they'll make friends with your pets and love being in a household with animal friends. There's actual stories of people who believe that they've got brownies living in their house or their backyard who say they've seen their dogs or their cats playing with them. There's nothing there for them to play with. Other people say, you always hear it. People say, you see my dog? It must be playing with my lost family member or a ghost from who died in this house or et cetera. People who believe in the brownies will often say that they've seen their animals actually playing with the brownies. So very interesting stuff. They're from all around Europe, but especially around England and Germany. And they also get angry if you mistreat your pets because they can they form a very big bond with that animal. If you want to attract a brownie to your house, you can put out a signal. So they like country areas, so rural areas. Farms make a good home for them. It's always good if you live in a home with lots of hiding places for the brownie to go during the day. They love homes with chests, closets, and secret doors. Brownies love cozy homes to try and make your home as warm and happy as possible. You can also put out a request for a brownie, Even verbally saying it or writing the request on a piece of paper and burning it seems to work. And that's what a lot of people do to attract them. But there's also the downside that if you don't look after them, if you don't provide offerings to them, that they can be fickle, they can get angry, they could do the opposite of what they normally do. Sometimes brownies will be between families, so they will belong to a few families in a neighborhood, and these are some of the ones that are normally the kinder ones, the nicer ones. So let's move on to pixies. Now, pixies, exactly what you're thinking of. We're thinking of the 4-inch tall, lives in your garden and woods, and have the wings, the Tinkerbell type, build. So they tend to show up a lot in pop culture. Although pixies are well known in southwestern England's folklore, they can live in any wooded area or garden. You can easily find pixies if you simply walk into the woods or a pretty patch of flowers. Pixies will go anywhere where there is nature. In fact, if you want to work with the fae, you can easily attract pixies to almost any location. Pixies do have wings, but they are known as earth or nature fairies. They're super tiny with human-like figures and delicate wings that move extremely fast, almost like a hummingbird. And people have actually said they've gotten these on camera. So there are people who believe there's photos up where people believe they've gotten a pixie on camera. There was that famous story of the little girls who took photos of them in the woods, and they turned out to be cardboard cutouts. So there is some trickery out there, and there's also some people out there who have taken photos, and it's definitely an insect. A lot of people believe that they have genuine photos of them. They prefer colors like blue or yellow, but generally only dress in green. They more nature related colors. They'll choose an area or community to live in, but do not like it when the buildings and such start getting built. They'll normally be traumatized and go into hiding unless they can leave the area. If the area is totally decimated, it'll wipe them out. If you want to draw a pixie in your yard, create a woodsy area or a pretty garden for them to live in. Pixies appreciate both shelter and nature, and they'll always come to check out a cute little fairy house. Now, in a lot of cultures, Norwegian cultures, Scandinavian, there's houses for the elves, and this can be seen as the same sort of thing with the pixies. So they're little tiny houses that are built where elves are. They want elves to come and move into. Now, a lot of people in Europe also do this for the pixies, and they want them to be in their yard looking after their gardens, helping the flowers grow and all that sort of thing. So people will build these little houses for them. Again, we're going back into that reward aspect, giving them something. Some people have a belief that you can just build a doorway. So I've met people who have actually built the doorways. You can see them sometimes in people's homes. They build a little doorway in the skirting board of their house, and they might have two or three of these in the house. I've seen them build them in the window frames as well. And these little doors open up, and on the other side, there's generally nothing. I've seen some pretty funny comedy ones where they open them up and you look inside and there's like, fairies and stuff having a beer, and doing some other naughty things. But there's also the genuine ones where people have built them with nothing on the other side, and they believe that this is helping to create a portal for the pixies to move between rooms and things like that. So even though pixies tend to enjoy contact with humans, they're very cunning and can delight in leading humans astray. So they're mischievous, and it's not they can't be trusted, they're not doing it to hurt anyone, but they might not understand what they're leading into. There's actually stories of children that go missing that have said that they followed pixies into the forest, and that's what they told rescuers. I followed a pixie into the forest. And first thought I had when I read these was it must be fireflies. But then when you realize they're in areas of the world where there are no fireflies, and there's even people who, in Australia, who've said that when they were children, they got led into areas of the forest or areas of the bush where their parents couldn't find them, and they followed some sort of a glowing light that had wings. So this might not be the fairy trying to do anything malicious. People believe it's just them mucking around or trying to show the children something. There tends to be a very big connection with children and pixies as well. So they don't understand desperation or pain. So when they lead you into a blackberry bush and you get stuck with thorns, they don't really understand that you're in pain because they don't feel it like that. But they think it's funny. They don't really understand the harm it can cause. They're also known to steal things and hide them around in different places around your house. So some people believe they're doing this with the keys. There's some people who believe that their gardening tools have been moved around, or one glove will get moved. A glove will get turned inside out and then put up in a tree and things like that. There's some people who say they've had their home rearranged, like just small things. You know, the coffee and the sugar been switched around, the spice cabinet rearranged, things like that. So they enjoy tiny houses, nectar and honey. Leaving small offerings out for pixies, if you're interested in making contact, is a good way to go. But again, like all things, you've got to be careful because it's sort of a double-edged sword. So they can help your garden, they can help your children as well, but they can also cause harm with non-intentionally. So they also believe that you can't find a pixie community because they're cloaked and they'll stay hidden, or that they're threw into another realm. Now, I've seen people, when we talked about, I mentioned just before about the doors in people's houses, I've also seen people build these in their trees. They'll build these doorways into the tree. When you're giving gifts to pixies, consider that it's what is natural to your region. So honeys from your area, fruits from your area, stuff like that. Now let's get into something a little bit darker. We have talked about these on the show before in the past, the Banshee. Now these really only came up in Ireland and Scotland, and typically on the moors, and has the cry of death. Normally it's a female spirit, or a type of fairy that predicts death. Her cry is typically an omen. She can appear in a lot of different forms, according to fairy lore. She could be a beautiful young woman, or a stately matron, or an old hag, or all three. And what I mean by that is you meet her, she's a beautiful young woman, then all of a sudden you look around and she's aged to a middle-aged woman straight away. And then you look around again, and now she's an old hag, and she'll scream at you. Terrifying stuff. Her mourning cries are known to be extremely haunting, and a lot of people believe that they hear these coming from forested areas. The Banshee runs a comb through her long silver hair while she cries. In fact, in some parts of Ireland, combs are thought to be bad luck simply because of the Banshee. Some folks believe there are many different Banshees in Ireland. A group of Banshees is very bad luck compared to a single fairy. The Banshee usually doesn't harm people she encounters, but her cry does predict death. However, when you hear her cry, she is simply predicting the death for someone in the area, not necessarily your own. But I'm guessing if you live out on a farm and there's not many people around and you hear that scream, you're going to get pretty spooked by that. We've talked about leprechauns before as well. Leprechauns are well-known types of fairies, and and a lot of people believe they're real. So go back to my leprechaun episode, and you'll learn a bit about leprechauns. Very small, aged men dressed in green and red. They're often wearing a pointed cap and love to smoke pipes. Now they're a fairy that you could give tobacco to, or whiskey to, or gold. They enjoy those three things. So they've got a much higher taste in things. So maybe not someone you really want to attract, but they can be known to attract wealth and good luck to your household. But again, they do enjoy causing some drama if you don't look after them. They love music and dance, and they do so themselves. They enjoy the fiddle, the Irish drum, and the harp. So I don't know. They probably don't really like coming into my man cave because they're probably not into heavy metal. But maybe they might like some of the stuff my wife plays. Most leprechauns avoid humans and because they're still afraid of when humans try to capture them. Then we've got elves. Now, elves, so many different representations of elves, aren't there? I'm a big Elder Scrolls fan. And, you know, you see elves in that, very similar to your World of Warcraft, your Tolkien-based elves. Tall, high elves with the long blonde hair. Your dark elves, the grayish blue skin. And then you've got your wood elves that... Yeah, your brown hair that live in the woods. So there's so many different types of elves in fantasy lore. Even Tolkien himself had written many different types of elves and different families and such. Now the elves that are in the Fëanor very similar. According to mythology, there are both light elves and dark elves in the fairy kingdom. In general, legends about elves tend to be from European Germanic sources, as well as Nordic and Icelandic. Again, elves can be the size of a person in many more modern uses of elves. But if we go back to the Icelandic and the Nordic teachings of the elves, they're very much small humans like a leprechaun. And often depicted with blonde hair and blue eyes. Now, I should say as well, when we talk about light elves and dark elves, there's a lot of different tellings of this being a skin color thing or a good versus bad thing. And sometimes it's just they're two separate tribes. So it just depends on the piece of literature that you're reading. They're the closest to humans in size and stature. But in some cultures, they're still small. They can also change height. They're always seen as being slimmer, but older than humans as well. High cheekbones, angular features, all that type of thing. Very much your Legolas type elf. Nowadays, folks in many cultures still believe that elves exist. In fact, many of the caves in Iceland are protected by the government because 3/4 of the residents believe that elves reside in the area. Elves are thought to be the types of fairies who typically place changelings in human homes. This can occur for a variety of reasons, and we'll go into changelings soon. They're always seen as protectors and caretakers. A lot of the... Seelie and Unseelie courts, soldiers are made up of elves. Again, going back to the Seelie and Unseelie courts, light elves are the Seelie, dark elves are the Unseelie. But obviously, differences in between as well. And then again, that's where some of the lore about forest elves comes from, is the elves that didn't choose a side. So light elves may have chosen the Seelie side, dark elves are the Unseelie, and then wood elves might have just gone, nah, we're just staying out of this, we're our own free elves. And if you actually look at a lot of lore, even in Witcher lore, the elves of the forest tend to be vagabonds. They tend to be cutthroats and things like that. So it's quite interesting. A lot of different cultures have taken on that. They can be the grittier style of elf. They're very smart and agile, and they have a keen perception for humans, but they avoid technology and they avoid humans at all costs. Many of them believe that humans are destroying the planet, which, I mean, in many ways, we are doing a bit of a number on it, aren't we? And a lot of them will stay within the realm or within that dimension that they're from. We mentioned changelings before. Let's have a talk about them. They can be a rather scary part. This can be a bit messed up. They aren't exactly a type of fae. They are in a league of their own. So according to legend, a changeling is a fairy child. So they've swapped out a fairy child with a human child. So the changeling will grow up with human parents, but won't appear like a normal human child. We'll come back to a story at the end of all this about a couple of green children this could have applied to. So fairies swap babies for a few reasons. Each culture has its own legends. Sometimes a fairy will swap a sick fae child with a healthy human child. This fae child will either die in infancy or will grow up sickly. It will notice that they're beautiful and artistic with fairy features, even though they may be unhealthy. Other fairies swap their babies because they want a healthy human child and feel that their own baby is ugly, or to strengthen their bloodline if there is sickness. Sometimes a fairy will need a talent that only a human child possesses. So this could have been, when you think about it, let's go back to that whole, the winter court. This could have been a coping mechanism for a lot of families. We gave birth to a child and died during the winter. Instead of saying, well, we were the silly ones of getting pregnant before the winter and putting our child at risk, many people might have looked at that and gone, No, it must have been a fae child. It wasn't our fault. Let's blame the fairies for stealing our child and swapping them out. This definitely wasn't our child. And this could also be, sadly, again, misinterpreted disabilities. Yeah, you look at ancient times, you look at how disabilities were treated, and I've heard of, people interpreting it as dwarfism and things like that, being that the child had been swapped out with a fairy. So if you do encounter a changeling, you'll notice their fairy features. They won't look like their parents and will probably have some magical skills. They may also have trouble fitting in socially because fairies relate to each other in a very different way. It is unclear if changelings ever truly existed or if this is a way to explain infant mortality. So there's a lot of people now who will say that they are fae babies. I don't know. I don't know if you can prove that. I guess if you did a blood test, they're probably going to come back with human blood. But there's some people who just believe that that's what they are. All right, we're pushing over the 40-minute mark now, so we've got a few more to go into. I want to talk about the dryads. You would have heard this if you're a long-time listener when we talked about forest spirits and tree spirits. Dryads are a type of fairy that are tied to trees. While they aren't the actual spirit of the tree, they are a type of fae. If the tree dies, the dryad will die too. So very much connected to the tree. Dryads don't typically travel far from their trees. They're very attached to one specific area and will do everything in their power to keep the tree alive. These types of fae will look more favorably upon humans if they care for their trees. They can be a bit shy, but when they see a human taking care of the environment and treating animals in nature well, they're more likely to open up and communicate. You will be able to tell that you have a dryad in your yard if any of your trees have a face look on them. Alternatively, you'll feel an active, different energy around the tree. This indicates a tree spirit also has a dryad attached. If you want to chat with dryads in your backyard, first show them your spirit through taking care of your trees. After a bit, they will begin to trust you. Dryads are mostly good. Innocent. They walk the ground with bare feet, and they're part of your tree. They attach themselves to a tree in your backyard. So have a look at your trees. If you've got a bit of a face in a tree, if you can see it, a knot in a tree that looks like a face, maybe you've got a dryad. And they tend to be in very healthy trees. And a lot of people believe that when forests are chopped down or bushfire rages through a forest, that the dryad is what rejuvenates that forest, is what helps the regrowth in that forest. And if, let's say, for instance, if it was a tree being cut down on purpose, then at some point the dryad will just give up and just go, well, we're moving on, or they'll return back to the dimension they came from, or alternatively, they die with the tree. So very innocent and can sometimes be overly connected to the tree to the point where they'll die if the tree dies. Then you got gnomes. Gnomes are well known in popular culture. We've seen the garden gnomes down at Bunnings, your garden stores that we put in the garden. We've got the gnomes from you name it, they appear in anything, you know, World of Warcraft, Harry Potter. They're all over ancient literature from England. Germany has so many gnome stories. It's they're all over the place. They're normally like a miniature dwarf. They mature quickly, and they typically appear old. In European folklore, you'll see them with the pointed red hats. You'll find gnomes in natural wooded areas. So their diet depends on what's in the area. So a lot of gnomes will live on vegetables, fruits, nuts, mushrooms, and eggs if you've got chickens or birds that nest in your trees. There's a lot of people who believe that they've seen nests in a tree, and then a day later the eggs are gone, and they blame it on gnomes. Gnomes are extremely connected to nature, and as with a lot of this fae, you'll notice that a lot of this fae are very connected to nature. But these are very related to anything with the earth, so they're more of an earth magic spirit connected to ground, to the soil, and they can really help you grow your gardens very, very well. They care for animals and are natural healers. They also tend to use their powers for animals and plant life, not humans. They're very shy and cautious, and they stay far away from humans, especially due to their small size. So I think we've got a lot of, there's a lot of water spirits as well, but we're going to leave it for now with the spirits and the types. The last one I want to talk about is the Will-O-Wisp. Now, this is a type of fae that is seen on any body of water at night. They will look like small fireflies or flickering orbs of light. The Will-O-Wisp is seen across the world and is known by many different names. So the Will-O-Wisp is just it's a phenomenon. You could also, almost like tiny little versions of the Min Min lights that we have here in Australia, just little orbs that float, but they generally float above water bodies of water. They also like calm waters rather than rough waters, so lakes, ponds, inland waters more than anything. I've even heard farmers report stories of this. They've looked out their backyard and they've seen glowing coming from a dam or a pond near their house. Some legends say that these types of fairy only appear as light, and that if you go up to it, that's all you'll see is light, or they'll disappear. Generally, you see Will-O-Wisps, you can assume that they're having a party, which they do almost nightly. So, they're party animals. So we've gone through quite a few types now. We'll talk about some... there's a few authors here that have written some really great stuff, so... There's two really good lines of books to read. The Arne Thompson Index of Folk Tales really goes into a lot of this stuff. Really, really good collection of books. I believe you can get them in modern print as well, but you can also find downloadable copies in places as well. But it is good to get them in book form if you can find them. And also the 1691 Treatise on the Fairies of Aberfoyle by Reverend Robert Kirk. A lot of information there about fairies and folklore. I'm not going to go into them too much because I do want to talk to my guests about them if they decide to come on. So there's so many different stories with the fae. So one story I really want to focus on, and we might come back around to this and do a whole oddball file on this story maybe, but it's the Green Children of Woolpit. Now, where this comes from is Woolpit, East Anglia, and in the village of Woolpit in the 12th century, some villagers found two young children near the village's wolf pits. Now, there was a young boy and his older sister, and this is documented very, very well for such a small village. They were found in large holes in the ground that they used to trap wolves. They were undernourished and their skin was green. That was the big thing that stood out, obviously. The skin was green and they spoke in a language that no one could understand and in an unfamiliar type of clothing. So it was very strange to the people. Like, they hadn't seen anyone around that looked like this, obviously with no green skin. They hadn't seen anyone dressed like this and the language was completely foreign to them. Now, they would only eat raw beans, and then they eventually start to eat normal food. But this is when their skin started to turn a more normal hue. Now, this does happen with certain fruits and vegetables. You eat nothing but carrots, you get an orange-colored skin. You eat nothing but tomatoes, your skin can get a reddy color. So potentially, just leaving on broad beans, maybe your skin does get a tinge of green, but it would be very, very uncommon for that to happen. And the amount to eat for that to happen in the first place is constant. So not saying it couldn't happen, but there could be an explanation. The young boy never recovered from his health, and soon after he died, his sister thrived and she ended up learning to speak English. She would go on to tell the head of the family who gave her and her brother refuge that they came from a place called St. Martin's Land, where the sun never shone and the light was like twilight. Now, think about that. Sun never shone and the light was like twilight. Very fey in some of those references that we were talking about before, especially if you belong to a particular court. She said that they had been herding their father's cattle when they heard the sound of bells coming from a cave. The bells are generally credited with being those of the cathedral at Bury St. Edmunds. And after following the sound, eventually they emerged from one of the wolf pits. So we're talking portal activity there. Some very interesting stuff. So there were so many witnesses who claimed that they'd seen the children. It had been reported across the land. It had become folklore of that country town. They just sprung from the earth is what people basically come to the terms with. Sadly, there's no real evidence of the clothes. Like, the clothes weren't kept that were strange to the people. I would have liked to have... It would have been good if someone had have kept them, but obviously 12th century, even if they did, maybe they wouldn't have survived. But some people were under the belief that they were birthed from the planet. Some people have come up with the idea that maybe they were aliens and in the wolf pit there, that somewhere there was a crashed alien spacecraft, which I don't know, you'd think you'd see that. But some people do believe that, and we'll get into a little bit of that before we finish up. The most popular historical explanation is that the children were Flemish immigrants, and potentially maybe there was an incident where the parents had been killed and or the parents were fleeing, and the children were dumped in a pit, knowing that the town would go and check those pits, and the Flemish parents fled. Might have been the explanation. There was the Battle of Fornham in 1173 that killed a lot of Flemings. So this could be a proof that they were orphans or that their parents were on the run. It could also be why the children didn't speak or had a hard time communicating because of the Flemish language being very different to what the people of Woolpit would have understood. It could have even been a bit of, the parents just couldn't afford to keep them. And being that they were Flemish, they couldn't get work anywhere. They weren't trusted. And so the best thing to do was to leave them somewhere where no one had really understood the war or had been involved in that war as much. So much folklore involving that. Again, we could go into a lot more information with that. I got that information from folklorethursday.com, and that's written by Charles Christian. A few of you might know Charles from his podcast, Urban Fantasist, and you can find him at www.urbanfantasist.com. Check out his shows. A great storyteller. Very, very good podcast. There's so much that we go into with this, and I think we're going to dive into a bit more here and there. As I said, I think having people on that know their stuff is going to be the key to this. And I'm going to learn alongside of all of you, hopefully, and hopefully learn some things that I didn't know before. But finally, there's a big connection between people saying that Fey lore is... the story of aliens being passed down. Now, while we're going through this, Maybe eventually we will get into some stories about that. But while we're going into this, I don't want everything, every story I tell to come back down to, but what if it's aliens? I think that gets just as annoying as people saying, but what if it's demons? Yeah, it's something we can consider down the track. But first of all, let's cover off the actual Fae lore. Let's go through the folklore. Let's go through the history, and let's find where the story goes. What you believe, what I believe. I think it's going to be more interesting going into that. But yeah, if you have any information on Fae lore, folklore to do with the Fae, if you are really, really good at this subject and you're just like, Oz, you have just butchered the stories, you don't know what you're talking about, please come on the show and explain to me why. I want to learn more about this. That goes for anyone, any show that I do. If you think that there's something that I'm just not getting right, let me know. Email is theoddballaussie@hotmail.com and the Twitter @AussieOddball. And yeah, direct message me, at me in a tweet, send me an email. I'll definitely respond to you. All right. So that basically sums it up for tonight's episode. I hope you all enjoyed that. A little bit waffly at times, but I hope you got a bit out of it. I definitely learnt as I researched. So yeah, it's a topic that's very fresh for me, but I'm finding some curious connections there. All right, so we'll be back soon with another Oddball File. I'm going to be doing them probably every second week. And right now we're just doing shows every fortnight. So every second fortnight, I should say, we'll have an Oddball File. And hopefully we'll start ramping some more shows up soon. As of this show, we're only 170 downloads away from 30,000 downloads, which is pretty cool. I mean, I know that's not big numbers considering how long I've been doing this for, but considering the break I had and the numbers we were getting before the break, I think that's pretty cool. I'm really, really happy. Once I hit that 30K mark, that's gonna be one of those big mountains that I was trying to climb. And it's really making me want to come back into the podcasting, especially the amount of people out there who have messaged me saying they've been so happy that I've been back. So thank you for that. Really does boost the ego a bit, to be honest. It makes you feel good and it makes you want to keep going. So very much appreciated. All right, let's close it out. Look after each other and stay safe out there in the weird. Good night.